Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Appreciate you being here. Before we begin the regular part of our council proceeding, we always start off with asking the folks in this room and the folks who are watching on television a question. Is it, how are the children? And the reason we ask that question is because we know that when children are well in the community is well. And we have folks come in and talk to us each week about the issue of children and youth. And today we have Aurora Dan. Aurora, could you please come up? She's an eighth grader at Park Rose Middle School. She's excited about going to high school because there's going to be so many changes. It's going to open up the world and engage in her dreams. So, Aurora, thank you for being here this morning. And would you tell the council what you'd like us to know?
Yes. Well, first I'd like to start off to say thank you for this opportunity. My name is Aurora Dan, and I'm from Park Rose Middle School. And the subject I wanted to speak about today is our first annual Park Rose Middle School Ride for Education program. And this is basically a large bike ride for anyone who wants to participate to help us earn a lot of money because we need a few more mobile labs for our school. Admission fee is $10 for students and $15 for adults. And all you need to really to bring is a bike and a helmet for safety. And there are different lengths that you can go at. There is a 2-mile, 5-mile, 10-mile, and 20-mile ride with stop points along the way in case you need to rest. The reason we're doing this is because at the moment we have only 70 computers for kid use, and the models are kind of limiting our knowledge. And so we have 820 students, and we need at least 60 new laptops in order to extend research and explore more confidently and safer. This event takes place Saturday. Hopefully it won't be raining. It's in May on the 19th. It starts at 8 a.m. and goes till about 1:30 p.m. The starting point is at Park Rose Middle School, and we will ride all through the Park Rose District. Lots of fun, lots of things to see. And I think we end back at Park Rose, the high school. And the high school boosters will be there. They're just basically a group of parents that support these type of events. And they're going to be there to serve treats and refreshments and hold a barbecue for everyone to congratulate their finish. And entries and registration are due April 1st. And when you register, you do get a free T-shirt that we have designed to thank you for your sponsor. And also, so far, our sponsors have been Bluebeam, Pacific Northwest, Chet Hill Insurance, Inc., Precision Images, Park Rose Educational Foundation, Celebration Church, and Farmers Insurance. And when you do end up at the finishing point, it's kind of like a party, what I would like to call, because it's sort of fun to know that you've helped someone and that you get to also be privileged to be there because you get an award at the end. And Mayor Tom Potter, I heard somewhere that you might be participating in this event also, and I wanted to thank you for helping us. And so it's just pretty much what I wanted to talk about and bring up. So
I understand that you want to go into law and perhaps police work when you're becoming
Yes, sir.
Adult.
Yes.
Well, that's a very worthwhile occupation to go into. It's just slightly above that of a firefighter.
Well, I was just going to say, Tom knows me too well. He knows what my cues
are. Had to beat him to the spot.
But thank you so much. And I would ask all citizens to support what Park Rose is doing because, unfortunately, in this day, we have to do things like this to make sure that our schools are as best suited as possible to educate our young people. So thank
correct.
You for coming in this morning.
Well,
Aurora.
Thank you for this opportunity again.
Let's give this young lady a hand. Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Agenda item 350, request of J. Boss Rubin to address Council regarding Burnside Street.
Morning. Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is J. Boss Rubin.
Burnside Street, like everything else in the universe, changes. It is changing right now. The new Civic is almost finished. A high-rise next to Jake's is in the works. Shiny new buildings coexist peacefully with bricks and mortar from uptown to old town. The bus mall and the Burnside Bridge, two major features, are simultaneously under construction. The winds of change are howling, and Burnside Street is adapting organically in the process. Burnside is the foundation that supports these many changes. It should be appreciated, not punished. I like the grit and the ghosts and the taverns and shops, but Burnside Street is utterly functional as well. The Oregonian examined the collision statistics and found that they are phony. Burnside is not a dangerous street, nor is it a street in an economic slump. It is lined with landmark businesses. I have experienced moments of ecstasy standing, walking, bicycling, driving a car, and driving a work truck up and down Burnside Street. Traffic flow on Burnside is already good. If it is perfected, drivers will drone on through without stopping and experiencing the city they're living in. It is possible to pause at a light and enjoy watching a man blow a horn or sell copies of Street Roots. Forget the bumper sticker variety of weird. Portlanders take pride in Portland's uniqueness. We honestly affirm that Portland is a real place, which is something you have to fight for in an increasingly reproduced world. This proposal is the city commissioner's scheme to wipe out the Skid Row dream, to replace holy human folly with plastic daisies. Only about two blocks of Burnside are Skid Row, though. The rest of the street is thriving. Burnside is second only to the Willamette River as the defining feature of Portland. It is the town's literal and figurative backbone. Portland has changed enormously in the last decade, and we've done a pretty good job rolling with the punches. A couplet is simply too much. Instead of continually tweaking the city that is Portland, this proposal aims to create something new and alien. Someone is pushing too hard for a new Portland covered in innovations and accomplishments. I've already gotten used to the sight of the tram. It's very nice. I don't think I'd get used to the sight of a one-way Burnside Street. Any plan to dramatically alter Burnside should not come from horse-trading politicians. There are two kinds of development. Trickle down and rise up. North and south, revolutionary and reactionary, developer and bum, preservationist and newcomer. We can all meet in the middle. We can all meet on Burnside Street. I will not cast a vote this afternoon. I can in no way tell any of you what would be right to do. The best I can do is evoke what is right and true about the Portland that is, as opposed to the Portland that could be in some perfectly imagined future. Keep an eye on the danger as the days get stranger. Don't pick up Burnside Street, mess her up, and rearrange her. Thank you.
Please call the next.
351, request of John F. Braddock to address council regarding the impeachment of President Bush and Vice President Cheney.
Thanks for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and council. Commissioners. I'm here. I'm John F. Braddock, Sr., resident of Northeast Portland. I'm here as an American citizen, as a citizen of Portland and Oregon, to seek your assistance in effecting the impeachment of the President and the Vice President of the United States of America. You each know about my nephew, Marine Corporal Travis Braddock Nall, who died in an explosion in Karbala, Iraq on July 2, 2003. That was the day Bush said, bring him on. It's now nearly 4 years ago. In materials I submitted to you, I told you something of my parents' March 13, 2003 deaths in despair a few days before American bombs began to hit Baghdad in a car fire on Mount Hood. I put in front of me here a picture of Travis and my parents on August 8th, 2002, during one of Travis's last leaves at our fourth annual family campout at Cape Lookout State Park. It wasn't the last time they were together, but a year later, on that same spot, at that same moment, I stood and they were all dead. Impeachment is not just my private passion, it is a sworn duty of each of us. For the good of the country, we must not give these perpetrators a free pass on the mess they have dealt. I sent each of you materials on my March 10th, 2007 impeachment resolution, which passed the Oregon State Democratic Party Central Committee on that date. I also submitted a copy of the bill that's pending in Washington State Legislature in the Senate for a law invoking Jefferson's Manual Rule 603, which permits a state legislature to initiate impeachment. I know this city council heard substantial testimony from May through the summer last year on an impeachment resolution. Action on such a resolution awaits your action. Now, I ask the Portland City Council that it resolve to encourage Oregon's legislature, using that Rule 603, and Congress to proceed with impeachment. I believe there will be an impeachment in Congress. Its vitality and prospects for success are enhanced by every citizen, official, elected, and elected body that recognizes the time, right, and justice of it. All six of us, each of the five of you and I, in my Oregon and Washington bar admissions, have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. Let us do our duty.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Please call the next.
Item 352, request of Harrison Sloan to address council regarding a magazine for youth.
Please call the next.
353, request of Adrian X. Thompson to address council regarding a school project called Hotspots, a teen's guide to Portland.
Adrian Thompson here. Please call the next.
354, request of DeAnthony Gill to address council regarding Open Meadows project to benefit teens.
DeAnthony Gill? Okay. Is that it?
That's all the communications.
Okay. In the consent agenda, we'll move to Item 361 has been requested to be pulled off, and it'll be heard since it's an emergency item before we lose our council majority at 11:30. So are there any other items any of the commissioners wish to pull off the consent agenda? Anybody in this room wish to pull any other items off the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stan?
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 355, intergovernmental agreement with Metro to receive the local share component of the 2006 open spaces bond measure.
Mr. Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. We have before us an exciting council item that will make it an official our partnership with Metro as it relates to purchasing new natural areas in Portland. As many of you know, land acquisition for parks is one of my highest priorities as Parks Commissioner, and this is a tremendous step forward. The city is delighted to receive the over $15 million identified as Portland's local share component of the 2006 Metro bond measure. We look forward to continuing the success of the 1995 measure, which brought hundreds of acres into our park system. The 2006 measure will be even more successful in its implementation. With us today is Metro President David Bragdon and Metro Council Member Rex Burkholder to help us kick off this new effort, and Dave McAllister, Portland's City Nature Manager, to discuss the intergovernmental agreement before us today. So, over to David first.
Thanks. Good morning, Mayor Potter, members of the Council, Dave McAllister, City Nature Manager, Portland Parks and Recreation. I have to say today we're very happy to present the beginning of city's participation in the Metro Bond Measure 2680 passed in November 2006. As you recall, the City Council approved Resolution 36382 on March 1, 2006, supporting Metro's intent to take the bond measure before the voters. This resolution specified projects to be funded through the Portland's local share of the bond. With the passage of the bond and consistent with the Council's resolution, Parks will be allocating over $15 million for the following projects. $8.4 million will be targeted for natural acquisition in the West Side Wildlife Corridor, West Side Streams, Willamette Bluffs, and in several areas in that will complement the regional target areas that Metro may be purchasing. Slightly more than $3 million will be used to acquire park land in park-deficient, low-income neighborhoods, notably Centennial, Cully, and Argy. $1.3 million will acquire trail corridor easements along Marine Drive and also in complement areas to the regional share target areas. Finally, $2.5 million will be used for habitat restoration and trail improvements in natural and parkland citywide. And I might add that we are going to be going out to the public June of 2007 for further refinements of these projects. As I mentioned, this is just the beginning of the city's efforts. You'll be hearing from us over the next several years as we bring individual acquisitions before you for your approval. Additionally, Metro will be purchasing properties with the city with its regional share, and we will bring IGAs related to the management of those properties before you. We look forward to the approval of the local share IGA so we can begin doing the good work of this bond immediately. And I might add that this is only one component of a larger series of efforts that Metro will be undertaking within the bond. And I have David Bragdon, Rex Burkholder, here to share with you those other components.
Mayor Potter, members of the commission, David Bragdon, president of the Metro Council, here with Councilor Rex Burkholder. It's budget season, so I assume that probably you often have people sitting in this chair asking you for money, so it's kind of a nice, it's a pleasure to be here and actually talking about giving you money. But in fact, it's really the public's money. That's the point of this whole effort, is that your constituents and taxpayers are our constituents and taxpayers. And I think the structure of this particular bond is a good model of partnership among different levels of government. And we intentionally structured this, and it's a model of how you can raise revenue regionally and accomplish regional objectives, yet also do some of that at the local level with local discretion. As well, there's a component in this measure where there's literally a neighborhood level of it. So I think it's a good model for trying to get things done in the region, having this vehicle on a regional basis, yet decision-making at various levels, including the local government. So you're the first city council that we've sat down and talked with since the passage of this measure, and you'll be the first city that we've formalized an agreement with. And it's really beyond just this $15 million. It's the start of a multi-level effort. So I just want to touch on the different features of the program, and then Councilor Burkholder will talk more specifically about the City of Portland. As you know, we have the large-scale effort at the regional level where our staff will be working with the staffs of local governments around the region and nonprofit groups to acquire natural areas. There are significant target areas within the City of Portland, and so we'll be working with your staff. Columbia SLU is one of those areas. Of course, you have a variety of bureaus that have been active in the Columbia SLU. Johnson Creek Watershed is another one that was added in this ballot measure, so we'll be working with you on that. Continuing the work in Forest Park or along Fano Creek in Southwest, Tryon Creek in Southwest, those are all examples of work that we'll continue. The local share, which is specifically what we're here to talk about, is an example, again, of accountability in government. We sat in front of you just over a year ago in March, and you talked about what you would do if this measure passed. We had a similar conversation with the voters region-wide, so it's gratifying to be able to be in public life and be able to tell the voters, if you vote for this, you will get that. And then here we are, not very long after passage, saying, sure enough, that's exactly what we're doing and memorializing it here. So appreciate the chance to celebrate this and moreover to continue working with you to spend this money, invest this money in the way that we told the voters we would, and that will be, I think, gratifying to them and then for future generations as well. So with your permission, I'd like to ask have Councilor Burkholder address you as well.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Commissioners. Rex Burkholder, Metro Councilor. I represent the northern half of the city of Portland, so I'm pretty excited about this program and what we're talking about with you here today. As President Bragdon said, there are a couple ways that this works together, and one is the regional target areas, which will be eligible for the $168 million of regional dollars that was approved by the voters with almost 60% in favor vote, and majority in every county voted for this. And I just wanted, the areas that we're looking at as regional target areas that complement the work you're doing include Forest Park connections, the Rock Creek headwaters and Greenway, which has some areas just the west slope in the city of Portland, Tryon Creek linkages, Johnson Creek and watershed, the Columbia Slough, and part of that is the 40-mile loop, the Willamette River Greenway, which is, I think you call it Wads Bluff?
Willamette Bluffs.
Okay, Wads Bluff is part of that there. The Fano Creek Greenway and Trail and the Springwater Corridor, all those are on our regional target areas, and therefore we'll be looking at those areas to try to acquire some land. And I'll let you just know that the very first acquisition done with this funds was actually along the Springwater Corridor on Johnson Creek. There's a one-acre parcel that's contiguous to Selwood Park, that if you stand on the bridge, the new bridge that's across Johnson Creek, you look down, that land that looks like it might be part of the park actually was privately owned. There's an acre there that we purchased already. And then we'll be working out a government agreement with you guys in terms of maintenance and taking care of that. But it's a great acquisition right on the creek in pretty good condition, and it needs a little bit of restoration, but it'll be a great asset to be added to that. The local share program is about $44 million out of this $230 million bond measure. About $15 million of that will come to the city of Portland. And the idea here is to, we will be coordinating, our staff will be working with your staff and trying to coordinate our acquisitions, your acquisitions, so that they complement each other as well. And we'll be offering technical assistance as well with our land acquisition staff, which has comprised of a number of real estate experts to help us get the best deals and also find the best pieces of properties with the biological staff. And then President Bragdon also mentioned the very neighborhood level program. This is a new feature of this bond measure that wasn't present last time, which is a nature and neighborhood capital grant program. And the idea there was to set aside a small amount of money, well, not small, $15 million, for challenge grants that for projects that we may not have been able to identify. Even though government's very smart and everybody, like David, really intelligent and know a lot of stuff, the idea is that there are neighborhood associations out there, there's community groups, there's schools in local governments may come up with ideas that they hadn't thought about in preparation for this bond measure. So this is a challenge grant program to trying to pull those out of the woodwork and come up with some other ideas, and focusing especially in areas that are parks deficient or natural area deficient and also lower income. But so those are the kind of the components of this. I think the idea was to try to make sure that these worked very closely with the goals of the local parks districts, including the city of Portland, to make sure that the regional effort raised every boat in terms of bringing new dollars and also the focus and expertise to this area to make an improvement overall for the whole region. Thank you very much for your support and participation in this. It's great to have a success like this under our belt. And I also, because he's here, I want to say President Bragdon was provided a lot of leadership on this one and made sure we recognize that it is our responsibility to the future to make sure that we keep preserving natural areas in the urban area. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Questions from the council?
Thanks to the money.
I just want to, I want to thank the Metro Council for its outstanding leadership and President Bragdon in getting this measure passed. And it will be, the dividends will pay off to many generations to come. And we're very grateful to be the first city to accept your local share.
Thank you.
We will treat it well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in. Testimony.
One person signed up, Linda Robinson.
I
Good morning. My name is Linda Robinson, and I live in Outer East Portland. And I wasn't planning to testify, but I couldn't help it. Having grown up in the Johnson Creek watershed and spent many years working with the Columbia Slough Watershed Council and living in Outer East Portland, I'm really excited to get this moving. Very pleased that we're going to purchase some parkland in some of our neighborhoods in Outer East Portland. Delighted to be involved with the Gateway Urban Renewal Area, which I think is an area that we've already begun brainstorming on how we might propose something to do with the Nature in the Neighborhoods grant that regreens that part of town. So I'm real excited. In terms of acquiring, I got to put a little plug in. I've been working with some folks in the Cully neighborhood, and they have some strong interest in purchasing a portion of the Colwood Golf Course, which is soon going to be going out of business, so I wanted to put that little plug in. But thank you, and I'm glad to see that this IGA is in place, and we can start spending the money. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
That's all who signed up.
Further discussion? Council members, please call the vote.
Adams.
Thanks for all your work. Appreciate the money. We'll put it to good use. Aye.
Leonard.
Well, I, of course, appreciate this, but also the direction Metro's taken with both Rex and David there. I mean, it has been noticeable for those of us who work in government what a great operation you guys have really created. And it's really a compliment to your leaderships. And this is an example of the kinds of great things that Metro does now that we're all very appreciative for. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Sten.
That's great working with you guys. Aye. Good job.
Potter.
Thanks, Metro. We really appreciate it. Aye. Please read, we're a little early for the 10:30 time certain. So let's move to, we've got several emergency votes on the regular agenda. Let's move to first on the agenda, please read item 374.
Did you want to do the 361 that you pulled off of consent?
Okay, we'll do that. Please read item 361.
Create a new non-represented classification of police internal affairs investigator and establish a compensation rate for this classification.
Staff here to discuss this. Please come forward.
My name is David Reese. I'm the class comp manager with the Bureau of Human Resources. This is a classification ordinance. It creates a new classification. This will be allowing the police bureau, representatives are with me today, to move current sworn positions to operations. And this new position, this new classification, will be a non-sworn classification that non-sworn employees can be recruited for and hired. That makes better use of their sworn staff, and they can comment on that further should the council have some questions.
Questions from council? Thank you, folks. I think Dan Handelman, are you here? You're the one that asked to have it removed from the consent. Is anybody else signed up for this?
I didn't have a sign-up sheet, okay. But I know we have people here to testify. Amanda, did you want to sign up for this, testify for this?
Good morning, Mayor Potter and Commissioners. My name is Dan Handelman.
Did
I'm with the group Portland
the
Cop Watch. And this is not just a mere reclassification ordinance. So what this is taking the job of overseeing police misconduct and changing who's doing the investigations from sworn police officers to non-sworn individuals. This is actually something we've been asking for a long time, to have people other than police investigating possible misconduct claims. However, we were kind of hoping that would be part of the Independent Police Review Board. As long as you're reclassifying who's going to be doing these investigations, why not put these investigators inside our system? And I think part of the problem is that system still hasn't been reviewed, even though there's a promise to have a review of that system 1 year after it got created. It's been 6 years now, and I think Commissioner Adams had that money set aside to review that system in June of 2005, and that review still hasn't happened. So in the meantime, now we're changing the system, which will make it harder to do an accurate review of how the system is functioning, because they're going to change who's doing the investigations. And it raises a number of questions, such as who's going to be overseeing these non-sworn people who are going to be doing these investigations, and are they going to have the power to compel the testimony of the other officers if they're not sworn officers? And I don't know the answers to these questions. Perhaps somebody can come up and answer them. Another thing that occurred to me is that the position of internal affairs right now is a stepping stone for officers within the Bureau. And we never suggested that once there were independent investigators at an independent review board, that internal affairs would disappear. So one of the jobs that police officers need to go through as they rise to the rank and file is to be part of internal affairs so they understand what it means to check on the conduct of their fellow officers. And if it's now going to be assigned to people who are not sworn officers, that's not going to be there available for the police anymore, at least not to the same extent. It's unclear how many of the sergeants, there are four being transferred out of internal affairs. It's not clear how many total sergeants there are. So there may be some still there, but it's going to be much more limited. And I think that the overall complaint that I would have about this being introduced on the consent agenda is that the city council is very aware that the citizens of the city are very concerned about police oversight as an issue and have a relatively major change in the way that that misconduct complaints are going to be handled with no public conversation ahead of time. And it seems like sort of a done deal that this money is going to be set aside for this. It's sort of unfortunate because we've been part of this discussion for a long time and now the system is changing with no public discussion. So I thank you for having this opportunity right now. I hope that there'll be more discussion before this gets resolved. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, Commissioners Leonard, Adams, Saltzman, Sten. My name is Alejandro Caral. I'm the Executive Director of the Northwest Constitutional Rights Center. I'm testifying this morning about this new classification of police internal affairs investigators created by the emergency ordinance. It is clear that the Portland Police Bureau and the Internal Affairs Division have had to deal with a lack of staff capacity, and this lack of capacity has had a negative impact on the ability of internal affairs to promptly and thoroughly investigate complaints filed with the Internal Police Review Division. So I applaud this initiative in as much as it will help relieve some of the pressure and hopefully move IPR investigations along with greater swiftness. I would like to take the opportunity, however, to comment on the ordinance and the creation of the new classification. Clearly, there are several questions that remain unanswered. This presents an opportunity for City Council to seek the input of community members and organizations and urge you to do so at the earliest possible time. First, it's unclear what the qualification requirements will be for the investigators hired under the new classification. It's important to note, as I have done before, that internal affairs detectives have conducted practically all of the investigations related to IPR complaints since the IPR system was implemented. One concern that the Northwest Constitutional Rights Center has raised with this council is the actual and perceived lack of independence and impartiality by IAD detectives when investigating other police officers within the Bureau. This new classification presents an opportunity to hire investigators that would be able to have an arm's-length relationship with police bureau officers under investigation. Thus, as the qualifications and requirements are developed, I would urge this body to consider requiring, at minimum, that candidates considered for these positions not be former Portland police officers. This is not unprecedented. The City of San Francisco and its police oversight body has precisely the same requirement. Second, it's unclear who will supervise this new classification of investigators and whether they will be held to the same standards as current IAD detectives. And finally, since most of the IPR complaints are currently investigated by the internal affairs detectives, a significant segment of the public feels the investigations lack independence and impartiality. This new classification could be an opportunity to revisit how IAD conducts investigations of IPR complaints and to evaluate whether requiring that all investigations are conducted by IPR investigators is a viable option that could improve both the quality of the investigation and IPR's reputation as a truly independent body. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. I have three questions. The first is, why hasn't the independent review that was funded 2 years ago, why hasn't it been done? Why hasn't the consultant been hired? Why hasn't that money been spent since it was allocated? The second is, why is this an emergency ordinance? Why did this not go through the process of going through the citizen committee, and why does it have to be passed today? and the third is under the new form of government in 2691, would this measure be on the calendar at all? Would it be something that would be subject to council's policy decision, or would it be an administrative something that would the public wouldn't even know about?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anybody else sign up to speak? Questions from the commissioners?
I do. What is the status of the consultant for the independent review?
Is that going to be done through the auditor's office?
I don't know.
Do we have information on, is anybody from the auditor's office here?
I've asked this question several times, and I recall the auditor said he didn't think his office was the appropriate place for this study to be conducted out of, given his status as overseer.
Come forward, Maria.
The mayor's office will be taking the lead on that, and we have been meeting with the auditor's office and also with other community members who would like specific questions answered. So we're working on the scope of work for that at this time. So
is that something that the mayor's office has been working on for 2 years, or did you just realize that the auditor wasn't going to do it and now are moving ahead?
No, actually, I think it was originally in Commissioner Adams' office, and then it was transferred to the mayor's office about a year ago. So we've just been working on trying to get it out the door in terms of the scope of work.
So what is the timeline?
Hopefully, we'll get it out within the next couple of weeks.
Okay. The RFP?
The RFP itself.
And why is it an unreasonable suggestion for anybody to wait to have this change done in concert with kind of the review and engaging some of the folks that are interested in this change? Why is that a bad idea?
I don't understand what your question is.
The criticisms I've heard here this morning are that the folks that interact with IPR a lot would have liked to have been involved in this decision today. I don't hear anybody actually criticizing the move, but that they should have been involved. Why is that not a good idea?
The decision to civilianize these?
Uh-huh. Well, not the decision to civilianize. Why should we be voting on this now? Why shouldn't we pull it off and allow that discussion to occur as they have requested? Why is that a bad idea?
I believe it was a decision of the chief's office to make these moves in accordance with the direction that she's going to make the department more efficient.
And to put more officers on the street. Did anybody from the police bureau wish to address this?
Well, that's actually not so much my question. I mean, I understand. I think everybody understands that. I mean, I appreciate that. That makes sense to me. What I heard was, however, a decision was made that was really fundamental in how the oversight occurs in internal affairs, and folks would have liked to have had some input into that. What is it so important that we do this today that we can't stop and have some of that consultation in the next couple of weeks before we move ahead on this?
I don't know. I do know that Chief Sizer has worked with IPR, and I don't know what kinds of conversations they've had. But
would you feel comfortable with setting this over for a couple of weeks, Mayor, until maybe we could confirm some of that and have some discussions? I think that's appropriate. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. I think we did make a decision, I believe, in the winter bump to endorse this move by the chief.
And again, I actually, on the substance of it, I completely am there. But I'm also sensitive to what I heard, which was we would like to have had some input to maybe even just tweak a little bit the issue of whether or not this should be prior law enforcement experience or not. Those kinds of things I think could be valuable to at least have a discussion about before we vote.
We'll pull it off and put it back on the regular agenda and then have a full presentation.
Thank you. Well, and hopefully, though, my intent isn't so much to have a full presentation as it is to have a discussion with the folks that we've heard from here today in the intervening time.
You mean the mayor's office have that discussion, the chief's
office? Sounds like the chief's office, but whoever you think is appropriate. Okay. But certainly the folks that are here and whoever the decision makers are.
Okay.
So are you referring this back to the mayor, or are you going to set it for a...
I'm asking to have it come back to the mayor's office.
Oh, okay. We're sending it back to your office. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, please read item 374.
Change the expiration date of the drug-free zone chapter to September 30, 2007.
Please read item 375 as well.
Change the expiration date of the prostitution free zone chapter to September 30, 2007.
Staff, please come forward on that.
Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor. My name is Maria Rubio. I'm the Policy Manager for Public Safety for Mayor Tom Potter. Our request from the Mayor's office is that we be granted a six-month extension through September 30th to continue the work of the Drug-Free and Prostitution-Free Zone Oversight Committee. We got a late start on the committee. We've met a couple of times and are meeting again tomorrow. The membership has provided some very good inquiries that we are following up on in terms of gathering the information that we can to make a good analysis and to provide some recommendations to council for either changes or to continue the ordinance. And the changes that we're asking for this morning are having to do with that extension. Do you want to cover those?
Mayor, members of the council, David Wolber with the City Attorney's Office. The ordinance before you has a direction that would change the sunset clause in the current drug and prostitution free zones. The current sunset clause would cause the zones to expire on April 14th of this year, and the change to the sunset clause would cause them to expire at the end of September 30, 2007. I think that there may also be a potential amendment which would add a couple of other directions to the ordinance, requiring bureaus to cooperate with the work of the Exclusion Zone Oversight Group, and requiring the oversight group to report to council on eight topics. And I think that you're being handed those possible amendments, and the list of topics is printed on the second page.
So how long has the Exclusion Zone Oversight Group now been up and running?
We've been up and running since February. And yes, I think as David mentioned, some of the work that we'll be looking at is whether the exclusion zone boundaries and the criteria used to create them properly define and address neighborhood livability problems, whether the review and appeal process of issued exclusions are effective in protecting against erroneous exclusions, whether Portland's police officers have used the exclusion tool effectively and fairly, whether zone enforcement supports or can be modified to support broader efforts to address root causes of drug and prostitution crime. Number five, whether the city should begin additional efforts to address drug and prostitution crime. And number six, whether zone enforcement results in unlawful discrimination based upon race and/or ethnicity. Number seven is whether zone enforcement has a positive effect on neighborhood livability. And number eight, whether the zone should be changed or renewed. And some of the questions that some of the members of the committee have asked and that we are gathering the data for are, the biggest question is why minorities are overrepresented. The percentage of people excluded who have prior convictions, the percentage of people who have been excluded with prior arrests, the number of arrests that lead to prosecution and conviction, race and ethnicity of those excluded, the number of exclusions by zone, the number of exclusions not upheld for lack of probable cause, and the number not upheld for technical reasons. And so as you can see, we have a lot of information that we're working on, and will require additional gathering of additional data as we get it from the Police Bureau to make some good recommendations.
As you know, and the council might know, my vote to extend the exclusion zones was in part predicated on the creation of this oversight group, and it's frustrating that it's frustrating that it is getting geared up so slowly. And I've heard concerns about from advocates, equality advocates, fairness advocates, that the group isn't necessarily working as well as it could be. I just wanted to raise those issues and give you and or the mayor or Dave the opportunity to comment on them so I could hear all sides.
I agree that the group has not been working as effectively. We have hired a facilitator to come in and help guide the process. It's really difficult for people who are vested in the outcome and come with a lot of passion to really step back and take an objective perspective. So I think that with the facilitator, we can move along a little bit more smoothly. I do think, however, that we have looked at the enforcement, the review process and also the appeals process, and we feel at least from my perspective, I think that we think it's a good process. I think that the hearings officer is doing a good job. I think that the process is working. Now we're needing to look at the data in terms of how it's affecting the population. I needed to also say that we did get a late start in terms of enforcement of the ordinance. We didn't really get up and running fully until September of 2006. So the data that we have is from September until to current date.
Thank you.
Did you bring a list of the composition of the committee?
I did.
So I've heard some concerns that the committee is not as balanced as people would like. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, we got some referrals from Representative Shields was on the list to be on the committee, but because he was not able to, he referred a couple of people, Chris O'Connor from the Public Defender's Office and Mr. Rogers, who resides in Northeast Portland. We also have community prosecutor Jim Hayden. We have Mike Reese from the Portland Police Bureau. We have Pastor Turner from Northeast Portland, and someone, Mr. Turner, also from the 82nd Avenue Prostitution and Drug-Free Zone. We do have myself and my assistant who also participate on that committee.
You have a list in front of you.
And is the makeup of the committee, did you kind of put this together as just a general balance, or was this set up with we should have, you know, some committees are we need 11 members and let's just try and balance it, and then other committees are we need two of these and two of these and three of those? How is this set up?
The recommendation, the mayor wanted people with the different perspectives to be at the table, and also we asked for a representative from each of the drug-free zone, prostitution-free zone areas who reside there. And therefore, Mr. Turner from the 82nd Avenue, Mr. Rogers, and also Pastor Turner from Northeast. Mike Heikendahl resides in Central Precinct area, which is the drug-free zone there. They represent those different areas of the drug-free zone.
And kind of getting to your earlier point, Maria, I mean, I know you guys are working hard on this, and I appreciate it. I think that there's been significant strides made in the last few months, and, you know, though we didn't make the year deadline, I appreciate the work that the mayor is doing, and I think I share many of his perspectives on trying to fix this. I just wonder if, you know, having spent, to be blunt, many years debating Deputy District Attorney Hayden, he's got a set point of view on this. And so an oversight, and I could say that for some of the other folks too on both sides. It doesn't appear to me to be a committee that's going to brainstorm together, to be blunt.
We would be happy to take recommendations on reorganizing the committee.
You know, people who already have a set position and implement the drug-free zone and convictions won't count if things are changed, probably shouldn't be on the oversight committee trying to shape it. I mean,
I do think that this committee has really raised some good questions and has helped to guide the discussion. But I'm open to recommendations from City Council and others in terms of the formation of the group.
Are you suggesting taking people off who are prosecutors?
Well, I don't know. I just know that, you know, in the case of Mr. Hayden, who I respect, he has for many years told me things that you are now implementing are not legal. I mean, he's sat here in this room and told me when I've asked, could the drug-free zone be modified in ways that it has now been modified and are now acting, could not be done. I've been told that it's impossible to get the kind of statistics that we're now getting. And so, I mean, I just, you know, with all due respect to the district attorney's office, they are not proponents of finding the middle ground on this strategy. And so I'm not necessarily saying that's the only person that shouldn't be on there. I'm just saying it appears to me that what we've done is taken the two sides that have been going at each other for in my, you know, I'm not new to this, for 10 years. And literally, and then put them in a room and thinking they're going to, it just seems like it should be a little more third party advising us than the folks who, you know, the Commander Reese is a terrific implementer of this, and his job is to implement the policy, you know. And so it just seems to me the folks who have to make the conviction stick, who have to implement the policy are on one side, and then you've got the, you know, I'm not going to just pick sides. I am on one side of this historically, and I'm not hiding that, but I you know, the Multnomah County Public Defender's Office has a vested interest in defending their clients. You know, so I don't know if this is the makeup of a committee that's most likely to come to the very best policy recommendations. And I do have pretty strong and passionate feelings about the quality of advice that I've received over 10 years on what's legal and what's not. I mean, there's been some kind of common sense things that we're just now moving on after 10 years of this program because Mayor Potter's interested in taking a look at other options. And the architects of the program that said it couldn't be changed are not going to come up with a new idea.
One of the recommendations might be that we use this group as sort of to give us what their perspectives are, but then to form another larger oversight group who actually looks at the data that we've come up with as a result of this group's questions.
I mean, maybe a better way of saying it is one cannot effectively oversee one's own work. An oversight committee has to be people who aren't actually doing the work to be providing oversight. An advisory committee of practitioners, I mean, like in the on some of the work, say, we've done on homeless strategy, we have a technical advisory committee that's made up of the people who are actually on the day-to-day work with the homeless, whether it's, you know, the police officers or the social services. Then we have more of a steering committee that are people that aren't doing the work day-to-day and kind of mm-hmm. can kind of take a step back and look at it. By no means am I trying to say that we don't want Mr. Hayden's input. I think we need the district attorneys. We're partners with them, despite my disagreements with them on some of these issues. We want and value and need to partner with them. And the more we disagree, the more we need to partner. I'm just saying, being in the position of having to provide the city council advice on how to oversee your own work is a difficult position, I think.
So you're saying all these positions should be independent of the process?
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud. I think that's I have not come prepared to make a statement. I just wanted to look at it.
I mean, I tend to agree with Commissioner Stem. When I look at this committee, I see a lot of what I would call sort of entrenched interests on one side or another. And it does seem to me, I think you just said a minute ago, it's been hard to get the committee
yes.
going, and you've had to bring in a facilitator. I'm not sure. It seems to me, you know, in the past when we set up independent committees, we strive to really get, you know, people who may live in an area or represent a certain geographic area but don't necessarily have a strong position one way or the other. And mm-hmm. those sort of make the core of an independent committee. And a lot of these people on the committee look like they would be sort of more of a technical advisory group or, mm-hmm. I guess, as Greg Frank and Dave Wilberl are listed as sort of resources to that committee.
Yeah, just advisors. The idea was also that as people gained more information and we got the data that we needed, that they would be able to go back and implement them within the process because they are part of the process. But I agree this might be a good time for us with the extension to convene a more neutral group of people who can work with the data and the answers to the questions that we've gained from this particular group, if you're open to that.
Frankly, see it more akin to a grand jury type model where you do get citizens who truly don't have any necessarily sure. grounding in the issue, and they're going to be the ones that are going to look at this issue with fresh eyes,
sure.
with the resources of the deputy district attorneys, our city attorneys, everybody else, as well as be able to solicit testimony.
I mean, yeah, as I look at it, you know, my rough count is that 7 of the 12 actually implement this policy on behalf of the council or some who's implementing it. 5 are affiliates, and that's counting a couple people who are pretty active in it but don't implement it as affiliates to get to 5. So, I mean, you got 3, I think, that are just clearly what I would call citizens that really aren't in the thing. 5 that are citizens that don't actually work directly for us, essentially, and 7 that work for us. So I don't know. That's just something to think about.
The 2 of those are positions. Both Greg Frank and Dave Wilborough are resources.
Okay, so yeah, I shouldn't have counted those. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And they don't necessarily attend. They come in as we need them for information.
That makes it. Yeah, I'll toss those out. So again, I'm really acting more on and we're all talking with the same people, well-meaning on both sides. I've heard fairly heated critique from more than one person that they don't feel like we've quite got the committee right, you know. Okay. And so that's what leads me down this path. I have not been to the committee meetings, and I even the folks I thoroughly disagree with on some of these issues, I know are of goodwill.
So meetings.
I was going to say the meetings are open to the public, and I am, as I mentioned earlier, happy to take referrals to get another group, more neutral group, to look at the information and make recommendations, if that's your wish.
And then on the topics that the group is going to look at, just want to clarify, Maria, you read the set of 8 questions and then mentioned quite a few other questions that have come up.
Yes.
I don't know that I need to wordsmith the substitute ordinance, but I would like to make sure that the more specific questions that you brought up are fully expected to be answered to us. And the reason I'm getting at that is just technically the question as to racial disparity that's in your ordinance is whether zone enforcement results in unlawful discrimination. And typically the answer to that will always be no. Particularly when it's something the city's exercising. I've never seen a case where the city's come back and said, yes, we are unlawfully discriminating through this process. So I don't expect to get anything but a no on that. And I do think from what I've seen, and I understand that they're preliminary and they give me great pause, that the racial disparity numbers are very jarring compared to the population as a whole. And I understand there's some arguments why that's the case, but I'd like to make sure that the lesser policy questions of below whether it's unlawful, but as to, you know, is it appropriate, all the things you were reading, you know, is there, I don't have words right off the top, but you read quite a list of questions that the committee had asked. And those are the ones I'm far more interested in than can we prove it's unlawful, because I have a feeling we're not going to prove it's unlawful on our own law. But I also have a feeling that these numbers need to be explained, at least I can't speak for my colleagues, but I think for myself, there's a sense that I'm very hesitant to keep moving on a policy that has these kind of disparate numbers, if in fact they do hold up. I know they're preliminary.
And as a matter of fact, that's exactly, I was writing as fast as I could as you were going through that list. So what I got was looking at issues based on prior convictions, prior arrest and convictions, prior number of, actually prior isn't the right word, the number that of exclusions not upheld because of a lack of probable cause. Mm-hmm. So I agree with Commissioner Stinn that's actually the information I need. And for me, I would not like it filtered through the committee, but rather these are statistical kinds of questions that I'd like to make my own judgment about in terms of whether it affects neighborhood livability, how it, whether or not the enforcement results in unlawful discrimination. I think these are good questions, but I don't want somebody else answering them for me. I want to be able to see the actual
data
mm-hmm. so I can draw my own conclusion. I told you last Friday that I would agree to extend this for 6 months, and the reason I'll do that is I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt to this process. But I have a lot of doubt, and I was prepared not to support this at all when it comes up, and I'm inclined not to support it when it comes back. And not for some of the reasons that we've heard here, but rather, I mean, I just feel very strongly